In the name of God who creates us, who redeems us, and sustains us, amen. You may be seated. I ran across an epigram this last week by Richard Crawshaw, the 17th century mystical poet or metaphysical poet. It's called, Two Went Up Into the Temple to Pray. Clearly, it's about this morning's gospel, and it goes like this. Two went to pray, or rather say, one went to brag, the other to pray. One stands up close and treads on high, where the other dares not lend his eye. One nearer to God's altar trod, the other to the altar's God. That's a convenient summary, I think, of this morning's gospel. Two people go to the temple ostensibly in order to say their prayers, but beneath the surface, it quickly becomes clear that one of these people approaches to brag about his efforts, while the other is simply there with nothing to offer, only to ask for God's mercy. Crawshaw's commentary on the final lines of his poem is predictable, and what I expect most of us would agree with. The braggart is there to get close to God's altar, an outward worldly manifestation of religion. The other knows that what is really required is not the outward worldly signs, but an inward spiritual state. The other is there to get close to God, in whose honor the altar exists. Seems clear enough. Simple. Everyone here, I'm sure, is fully aware that we must choose between the worldly outward trappings of religion and the spiritual inward experience of a relationship with God. Our faith calls us to choose the relationship with God over the world every time. But today I want to suggest that the Pharisee, this braggart, the person who is there to show religion and to focus on the trappings of religion, this person is not nearly so bad as we might like to think. As a matter of fact, this is a tricky gospel. It's a subversive gospel, really. It turns everything not only upside down, but inside out as well. I say that because, of course, without our even noticing, this particular gospel can turn on us. Turn on us and place us in a most uncomfortable position. Let me try to be more clear about this. Consider just for a second what Crawshaw's interpretation of this gospel really says. It says, two people went to pray. No, only one went to pray, the good sinner. That's who went to pray. The other, that mean and nasty old Pharisee, he went to show off. That's what Crawshaw was saying just a moment ago, isn't it? The tax collector, the good sinner, knows that the reason for going to the temple is in order to get close to God. The bad Pharisee, on the other hand, goes to the temple to show off. Any of you here ever read the children's magazine highlights? Maybe at the dentist's office? Well, that's what this actually reminds me of. It reminds me of the characters Goofus and Gallant. Remember them? So here's how it would go. Goofus goes to the temple to show off how good he is. Gallant goes to the temple to be close to God. Goofus looks for his self-worth in the eyes of other people. Gallant finds his self-worth in the eyes of God. Goofus is bad. Gallant is good. Don't we all thank God we're not like Goofus? And that's, of course, at the exact point where the gospel turns on us. That's the moment when it leaps up and shouts, "Gotcha. God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, thieves, rogues, adulterers, and even like this Pharisee." You remember catch 22, right? Yosarian could only get out of the army by being crazy. But if he was crazy, then he wouldn't want to get out of the army. That's exactly what this is like. The real way for us to get close to God is by admitting that we're not worthy to being close to God. And if we think that by not being worthy, we're going to somehow get worthy, then of course we won't be worthy because we really think we are worthy. Do the math. It's enough to drive you crazy. It's tough. As a matter of fact, I might even say that it's impossible not to end up as the Pharisee. Because the moment when we think we've got this religion stuff down, when we think we've got it handled, that's the moment we think we're on top. And that's the moment when everything turns upside down. The Ferris wheel cycles back around again, and suddenly we're at the bottom looking up. It's a spiritual catch-22. So what do? How do we handle it? Well, let me first of all offer a suggestion. First of all, let me suggest that no matter how hard we try, no matter what we do, no matter how good a life we live, no matter how humble we are, no matter how righteous we are, there's absolutely nothing we can do that will ever make us truly worthy of having a relationship with God. We can go to church every week. We can pray 7 times a day. We can spend our entire lifetime working and striving to do the right thing, whatever that is. We can give 10, we can give 20% of our income to church. And none of it, absolutely none of that will make us worthy of God. It might make us a better person. It might make our lives more full and meaningful. But it doesn't mean a thing when it comes to God. Even admitting that there's nothing we can do to earn God's favor means absolutely nothing to God. And that's precisely the point. There's nothing we can do to earn God's favor. There's nothing we can do because we already have it. There's nothing we can do because we have that favor. How can you earn something you've already got? How can you pay a debt that's already been forgiven? How can you forge a relationship that's already there? What I'm saying is this: in the person of Jesus, God has given us a promise of a never-ending relationship, a covenant, a love that does not die, a banquet that will never end. The Pharisee, the tax collector, schlemiels, deadbeats, losers, both of them. Neither of them is worth bothering with when it comes right down to it. Both of them are equally accepted by God in spite of it all. And the rest of us, well, I'm not going to start calling names out. But I'll own the label for myself. I'm an okay guy, but truth be told, I'm as big a fool as the next guy. But a fool that's loved by God. A fool that's accepted by God. And that's the good news of the gospel. All of us loved. On this fall's theme, all of us rich in love, you could say. All of us accepted, all of us embraced. And knowing that, knowing that there's nothing we can do to pay for that gift that's already been given, then suddenly we can discover the true joy that is life. Suddenly, because we're loved, we are freed to love others and to ask nothing in return. Suddenly, because we're accepted, we are freed to accept others and ask for nothing in return. Suddenly, because we've given so much, been given so much, we're freed to give generously to others and ask for nothing in return. That's the way it works. That's the way God works. That's what it means to be rich in love. And quite frankly, I can't think of anything better to say on a Sunday morning than that. Amen.